welcome to the Logistics Tribe. I'm Boris Felgendreher, founder of the Logistics Tribe, and today's guest is Paul Travers, the founder and CEO of Vuzix, one of the world's leading developers of augmented reality smart glasses. Super, super cool stuff. Today's host of the podcast is Marco Prügelmeier, co-founder of the Logistics Tribe. And Marco, of course, is a perfect match for this. He has over 20 years of experience in various logistics roles at BMW. And this is right up his alley. So without further ado, here comes Paul Travers, interviewed by Marco Prügelmeier. Happy listening.
Paul, welcome to the Logistics Tribe.
Yeah, Marco, it's a pleasure to be here, man. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to have you here on the show, because today we would like to talk about AR, augmented reality. And who could I ask better than you, Paul? What I wanted to ask you is to just give an overview about what actually is AR, and even maybe more interesting to some guys, what is it compared to VR and mixed reality? So how does that all fit together, and how does that work out?
I think it might help to get a little bit of history on me to see the roadmap of how I've come from actually the VR industry all the way through to today, to where we are with the AR space. Kind of help paint the picture for why we are where we're at actually. So, you know, I started a business making virtual reality headsets, actually. That was my first wearable display company. This was in 93 or 4, something like that.
And I read about it, yeah.
Yes, the first product we came out with was a product called the VFX1, which was a football helmet sign. It was, honestly speaking, it was quite revolutionary. For those that might remember playing Quake and Doom and all those first-person shooters, and we had over 100 titles that work with these VR headset, and you could turn your head and look around inside just like you can with a VR system today, and it had a controller. You could shoot the bad guys, and you could use it to move through the environment. It was not nearly as good as it is today, okay? But the first time out, we sold a lot of product. In our first quarter, I think maybe over $6 million worth of product, which for a little tiny Vuzix, at the time it was a company called Forte. But that was a good business for us to get started. You know, the problem was the technologies, the displays, even the graphics cards back then, they were, you know, they had a USB, I think they called it, I can't remember what the name of the slot. It was a set of pins across the top of it. It was a complex mess. The PC did not have, you know, decent graphics processors or anything. Clearly, we've come a long way from those days. So what I did was in 1997, I bought that company back, and I started – that's where Vuzix came from. So we have a long history of making wearable display products. The first thing that we focused on, though, was the defense space in the U.S. Instead of making gaming headsets for consumers, we knew there was a long way to go before they would be something everybody would want, and the tech was good enough. So we made these thermal weapon sight engines for the U.S. military for night vision kinds of systems. We sold to the heavy, light, medium thermal weapon sight programs. And at the time, we made another product, which was a near-eye display little thing called TacEye. And this was used by the special forces. Excuse me. They would drive – there was a company called iRobot. They're still out there today. I'm sure you can look them up. A lot of people have vacuum cleaners in their house.
The vacuum cleaner robots. Yeah, sure. I know them, yeah.
They have a whole robot division. They used to sell a lot of stuff in defense. I don't know if they still do. But back then, they had a robot called a PackBot, and you could grab them out of literally a backpack, throw it in a building, and you could drive the robot around inside the building, but you couldn't see what it was doing unless you had our glasses on. The glasses had one eye. It was SVGA resolution, but it was usable in the real world. It was different than virtual reality, where you know, if you're in the military, you have a VR headset on, you're not in the middle of a war environment. You might be doing some training, but you're blind to the real world, right? Yeah.
And exactly, and that's the difference, right? So that with a VR headset, you just can't see the real world. You're just in a computer simulation, basically.
Exactly. And we started in that space, but we quickly learned that if we're going to make money, and Vuzix was paying for the bills based on our business, right? So we had to make products people could use. And for us, these near-eye display solutions that allowed you to be in the real world gave us some good business opportunities. And so the special forces guys, they would plug our little TACI into a toughbook. They carried, I don't know, 200 to 300 pounds of gear, right? And they would plug this into their toughbook and use it as the display for the toughbook. And they're carrying all this stuff. And, you know, at the middle of the night, they'd have to open up their laptops, right? And they'd light up like a Christmas tree. And they're like, you know, Paul, we want to get rid of all that stuff. We want a pair of Oakley-style sunglasses that are see-through with computers in them that look cool. And we call it the Oakley Gate. The U.S. military had a name for it even. And they're like, if you can solve that problem, the Oakley Gate problem, half the U.S. military would buy these glasses. So you need a pair of glasses, you need computers in them, you need all this stuff, right? That, you know, you can fit in a pair of glasses, tough order. Nobody's been able to just yeah. clearly, right? But so the difference here was, though, these were glasses you could use in the real world. And we call that augmented reality in the way we think of it here at Vuzix, in that you're doing things in the real world and you're augmenting your vision system mm-hmm. and your audio systems. And like, there's a whole bunch of senses that glasses allow you to do. You augment those senses with information to help you get a job done. But you can do it in the real world now. That's the big difference. Now, mm-hmm. VR versus AR, right? The mixed reality, we look at that as if it's a digital version of an optical see-through system where you got cameras out there, and the glasses, when you put them on, have screens on them, and they see through the eyes of the cameras into the real world, and then you can digitally mix information on what the camera sees in the displays that you're looking at. So it's a complex digital version of what we call augmented reality, which are the optical mm-hmm. systems. Many people have different different definitions for all these things, but for Vuzix mm-hmm. anyway, it's mm-hmm. sort of how we look at all of that. And mm-hmm. what we've learned over time, because we've had to make products people could use, if you make big, bulky, heavy, only works for an hour, hurts when you wear it, you fail out of the gates. And if you look at most of the competing products that are out there today, and not to throw folks under the bus, but you know, you could imagine if you're using these to pick out of a warehouse, let's say. So now you've mm-hmm. got the glasses on and it's helping you with information where to pick, right? How many to pick. You look at the box, and above the box is the number 5, because you know you're going to pick out of that box 5 devices. You know, you got all that stuff. But if you're wearing a pair of glasses that only can be powered for an hour and a half, they're big and they're bulky. They weigh a couple of pounds. You got to crank them down in the back. You are not going to be picking for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Right? You need lightweight, truly slim, all day long wearable glasses. And then that's one of the things that Vuzix learned over all of this time. We've made every one of the big, bulky, crazy things. I mean, I'm not saying we make HoloLens or Magic Leaps today, but we have made a lot of big, heavy, bulky things. And we've learned that in the real world, and especially in enterprise, they don't work. Because you can't put in an 8-hour day and the like. So mm-hmm. we make augmented reality solutions. They're designed for enterprise today. And like our M400, as an example, it weighs like 2.8 ounces. Mm-hmm. And today we have doctors wearing these things, right? And the really cool bit is there's a camera that looks into the real world with these glasses on. The doctor's wearing them, and he's trying to teach how to do open heart surgery, let's say, to 200 students. He's the glasses on, and 8 hours later, he still has the glasses on doing the operation. So you can imagine how that lightweight, the ability to put the display systems where you need them, that whole not big and bulky is so important in those kinds of applications. And here they're augmenting the space in that the doctor's using the glasses, the cameras are running. Mm-hmm. He's seeing through this little viewfinder what's going on, and he's sharing with everybody else what he's looking at. In some cases, it's the other way around. There's a doctor in South Africa, let's say, that's doing a particular procedure the first time. There's another doctor in California that's an expert. He logs into a portal, HIPAA-compliant portal, and he literally sees exactly what that doctor in South Africa is doing. He can reach onto his screen in California and draw a circle on the screen where the doctor mm-hmm. in California or in South Africa should cut next. Mm-hmm. And he can see all that. Like, the doctor was literally transported into his spot, augmenting his personal perspective and helping him mm-hmm. get a particular job done.
Amazing. Yeah, that's really good. And Paul, you mentioned already three
different use cases or industries? You mentioned military, of course, at the origin, yeah, and logistics and medical. Where do you see the most benefits in using AR? Are there certain industries where you see huge potentials, and what are those, and what's your opinion on that?
I am very convinced that the future of computing is going to be in smart glasses and wearable computers. So this is going to be everywhere. Marco, I don't think in 10 years from now you'll use a phone anymore. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be very prolific stuff. It's where the world's going before it's all said and done. And a lot of people are like, I don't believe that. I mean, it's true. My mother still has a wired phone hooked up to the wall. Right, but there's so many things that you can do with a pair of glasses that can connect the digital and the real world space, that when it is glasses that people want to wear, it's going to be used everywhere. Now today, Enterprise is where it's at. I mean, nobody wants to look like they just stepped off the Starship Enterprise because they've got these techie glasses on. Google used to be known, people were called glass holes that wore them. I hope that's okay to use that language in the podcast here, but you can't look odd in the mass markets, right? But what we build today are tools. You know, these things look like a tool belt. They're ruggedized. They're designed. They're IP67 rated. They can be used in the rain. You can dip them underwater. They're tough. You can drop them from 2 meters, right? So they're designed to go to work. And in the workspace today, there's a couple of markets. Now, it's a broad set of opportunities that have to do with remote work and solving remote problems. And COVID, as it happens, has driven our business in a big way. Now, it should have, with or without COVID, this technology should be being adopted, but it takes a long time to change how a field service organization might work. You know, all of a sudden, you're not going to get on an airplane anymore. You're going to send these glasses. They're going to be on the job site. We're going to do it remotely. The only guys going to be on that job site are the guys that are supposed to be on that job site because somebody else might have COVID. Now, that's a forcing function that has forced people to start doing things in a different way. And for remote support, working in medical situations like the Ohana One example I just gave you, where there's a doctor in South Africa and teaching kinds of applications and all of these applications around remote getting stuff done is huge today. And the interesting thing is it's setting the pace for the future. You think about the problem where you've got equipment or factories in China and you have to do factory audits, right? And so you got a guy, he's a field service guy or he's a field auditor, and he gets on an airplane and spends 3 weeks in China going from this city to this city to this plant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And all that money and all that travel time and all the resources that go into fueling the airplanes and or each one of those plants has smart glasses in them. Now the auditor simply gets on a webcast link. It could be Zoom, frankly, easy enough. Mm-hmm. He can visit each one of those plants without getting on a plane. He can get the audits done. He can, with the right software, he can record those audits. He can have an audit trail when it's all said and done. You don't have to cut. It's none of the cost associated with all that travel, and you can get it done in 1 or 2 days as opposed to a week or a month. So all those kinds of savings should be something that's happening today regardless. But because of COVID, it's forcing folks to look at other ways to get some of these problems solved because they can't get on airplanes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the case, I think, until maybe fall, for all we know. I mean, let's hope.
Yeah, but still then it will be, especially with business travel, at least here in Europe, I can feel that it will be probably a kind of a different world after COVID. And you're probably not jumping on an airplane anymore for, yeah, doing something like that you mentioned right now, yeah, what you could easily do remotely, yeah, and I see that's a huge field for AR, yeah, definitely.
You can imagine in the medical space how critically important that is today too. I mean, there's all this equipment that are in hospitals around the world that it's not the hospital that keeps that equipment running. It's medical device companies. The companies that make that equipment actually even participate in operations often. they can't even get in the darn hospital. So they have our glasses there now so that remotely doctors can log in and see to it that the equipment's running, do training on the equipment, onboarding new employees. There are so many things around COVID that have made remote work become an important thing. Now, before COVID hit, using smart glasses in warehouses for picking purposes, in stores for filling carts, you know, Instacart kinds of stuff where you got a company that goes through and picks for five people at a time, fills a cart, and then they'll either do curbside delivery or they'll ship it for them. There's a big improvement in performance, cost, and time with using glasses in that right now, too. The problem is COVID, our latest glasses are a racehorse. The M400, and it just started shipping in October of last year, right? So you got October, November, December, January, February, the world fell apart, March. All of these picking applications, warehousing kinds of things. There was so much stuff that was happening, but a lot of it has gotten put on hold. It's all starting to come back on board. And here's the cool bit about, you know, using them to pick for production lines, let's say, as an example. You know, the car industry would be a really good use case, I think. You have a car.
Yeah, we tried it. Yeah. When I was working still at BMW, we tried. Actually, we tried it with Vuzix glasses. So, it's really getting there because right now you have the wearability. Yeah. You, it's easy to wear them. We actually did the first trial. It was a PhD thesis that we did in 8-hour shift trials, and it worked just perfectly.
The nice thing about it, right, especially if they're optically see-through glasses, it's not a picture-in-picture. So the M400 today, right, you put it up to your eyepiece and you look in it, and it's like looking through the viewfinder of a high-end camcorder, for those people that remember what a camcorder is, right? So you got this little viewfinder you're looking in. So what that means is you look in the viewfinder, you think about what you're seeing, and then you look in the real world, and you often have to do a translation between these two things. And when that happens, people are thinking, people make mistakes. For instance, inside the viewfinder, you might have pick to box 7 as an example. Well, going back and forth, it's pick 7, box 2. And before you know it, they're putting orange turn signals on the car as opposed to the red ones, which means when the car comes off the production line and gets inspected, it has to go back for rework, offline, expensive stuff. Now, with optical see-through glasses, it's a whole different gig. Because now what happens is you're looking at box 7, and there's a number 2 over the top of it. There's no thinking anymore. There's no picture in picture. It's a direct relationship. You can't get this wrong unless you don't know how to count. And then with cross checks and using the scanning capabilities of the glasses, because these guys have barcode scanners built in, or with a third party scanner that's tied in, or maybe a Bluetooth connection to the glasses, you can cross check, and the error rates can go to 0 in those kinds of cases. And when you're picking in store, as an example, if you know the 5 people you're picking for, right, and you know what you're picking as you go through the store, you can make one trip through the store and pick 20 to 40% faster. And because you now have a display system and it's hands-free, when you get to the butter, right, and it's like, oh, I'm picking butter. They don't have butter. Margarine could be the other option, and boom, you get the margarine. And so you always got there's an opportunity for upselling along the way. Maybe instead of filet mignon, you're gonna go with hamburger as an alternative, or vice versa, right? But so you're picking faster, you're getting the customer more choices. While you're in the store, you can actually make a call to the customer and say, they don't have this, they have this, are you acceptable with that? There's just so much more that can be done with smart glasses. And faster because they're hands free, you know, those kinds of things. So warehousing and logistics, picking, these are all going to be big opportunities down the road. And, you know, this example I just gave you even took into account the fact that you could use these things for remote communications with a customer, because these are effectively like doing a FaceTime call. But in this case, the FaceTime is looking forward at the work product that you're working on.
Yeah, and probably I could imagine, I don't know what your view is on that, but maybe things will be combined in the future even, so that, for example, we were thinking of displaying the soccer results from Bayern Munich or something into the display for those guys who liked it or something like that. Yeah? So, or gamification, you could think about that. Yeah? I don't know what do you think about the combination and the information that is getting to get all together in the glasses and that you can use actually in real time, because we haven't talked about the time delays. I think they are actually not there anymore, because when we tried it 4, 5, 6 years ago, then there were very huge time delays and you were really slow. But now this is all in real time, basically.
It is, Marco. I mean, if you have a poor network, it can get a little bit challenging. But if it's a halfway decent network, which if you've got a manufacturing plant floor or a warehouse, you can make sure that happens. Mm-hmm. And with 5G coming, it's even more amazing. I mean, 5G can guarantee you like 10 to 16 millisecond turn times on requests and on transmissions of video. And so when you say hello and turn your head, the guy on the other end is seeing that thing happen in real time. Now, if it's the doctor, or maybe you're trying to disarm a bomb, right? You got the glasses on and you're looking. The last thing you want is the guy on the other end to circle something and have it show up 5 or 6 seconds later.
Yeah.
These visual, audio-visual communications have to be real-time kinds of things. And with the networks and stuff the way they are today, it all can happen just like that. And it's back and forth real-time. Unlike, you know, a 4G or an LTE connection where, you know, you press the button and it buffers a little bit for the video to finally start happening. And it doesn't work well for AR systems. You need to press the button and boom, it happens back and forth over the networks. And those things all are doable today. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And I also agree with you that these things are going to become the communications tool of the future. So everything will happen over these glasses. While you're doing it, if you want to have the game plan in the upper left-hand corner, you could do those kinds of things. Now, when you're on the plant floor at BMW, whether or not they want you watching TV shows and stuff is a different story. But, you know, those are clearly things that are all configurable, and you know what you let people do on the glasses while they're at work. But I will say that being able to get information from your supervisor, hey, I'm out in the plant floor, I'm having a hard time, and boom, an inset shows up and he or she is in the upper left hand corner and they're like, well, let me take a look, and oh, I'll get you some help out there right now. I mean, you know, all those real-time communications. It's not just like I got a barcode scanner in my hand, oh, I got a problem, now I got to put all that crap down and go. You're connected always.
So there is some convergence of technologies happening here. Like you mentioned, 5G enabling the even faster throughput and so on. And I see that. Paul, one question about the eyeglass wearers. So if you have to wear eyeglasses, optical glasses, so is there a solution for that with AR glasses?
Yeah, I mean, all of the products Vuzix builds today are designed to work for a cross section of your employee base, everybody. So the idea would be is if you wear glasses, Marco, that we have mounts that are designed to work with your glasses, or you can get prescriptions built into our solutions so that they become your glasses specifically. If you're left eye dominant, that's not a problem. We can, in the monocular style devices that we have, we can run them on your left eye. They automatically flip. Everything just works when you move it from left eye to right eye. We have hard hat mounts. We have safety glasses mounts. You can mount them on a baseball cap. In fact, if you look behind me there, I got 3 or 4 guys in a row back there wearing them in different, from military headsets to, you know, we've developed this common rail for our enterprise products. The M400 and the 4000. The 4000's got optically see-through. So we have a mixed reality pair, smart glasses, and we have an augmented reality pair that are optically see-through. And they all mount on all these same mounts. So you can wear them 6 ways from Sunday with and without glasses, get your prescriptions with them. And these next generation glasses that we're working on, I mean, they look strikingly like a pair of, well, you know, we've been trying to get to the Oakley gate, like I said early on in the year. And these next generation glasses, well, you got a sneak peek. I mean, maybe you can tell people to go to our website to check it out. they look like they're the Kingsman style glasses on the movie The Kingsman or Oakley.
Yeah.
These are binocular too, by the way. There's displays in both eyes, so it's a very comfortable stereoscopic image out in space that feels like you could reach out and touch it.
I just wanted to ask you, Paul, about that, Paul, because actually last week you have attended the CES. It was not in Las Vegas, I suppose. It was online this time, but you got awarded. Or Vuzix got awarded three times with three different rewards. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that. And I think at least one of those awards were for the new type of glasses that you just were mentioning.
Yeah, actually, the new glasses won three different awards. They are so unique, Marco. Nobody has yet glasses that actually provide the kind of performance that these glasses have. You know, there's companies like, you know, Magic Leap, which I'm sure many people have seen their glasses. But when you look through those things, they're like welding helmet thick lenses that are dark, dark to see through. And then there's HoloLens, which weighs a pound and a half, 2 pounds. And, you know, they're very expensive. And then there's companies like Enreal and the like that have optics that are, not to again throw anybody under the bus, but they're old technology. These birdbath optics are like Copernicus days. Mirrors and lenses and, you know, that sort of stuff. And these glasses use our next generation waveguides. They use these next generation micro LEDs.
In both eyes, right?
In both eyes, yeah. Look how small this thing is. This is bloody amazing. Unfortunately, it's a podcast, so you can't show people, but
we have to describe it. Oh, yeah. It's like a penny. No, it's smaller than a penny, right?
Smaller. It's the size of a small eraser on the end of a pencil. Uh-huh. And if I were to take this thing and point it at the wall, it would project a beautiful image up on the wall. And because it's so small, you can put these and they disappear in the temples of the glasses. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you end up with this beautiful stereo image and these little tiny, tiny displays. Now, the other cool thing about these displays are they're front lit. So they're self-emitting displays. They're not front lit. A front lit display is like a LCOS display, right? They have these little tiny displays. They're maybe they're a quarter of an inch in diagonal, but to make them work, you have to illuminate them from the top. Mm-hmm. So you take a red, a blue, and a green LED, right? And you put a bunch of lenses and stuff on front of them, and that becomes a flashlight that then goes through a beam splitter cube. Sorry for the optical terms here, but this is a cube that sits on top of the display. Yeah. The light goes into that cube and it bounces down onto the display. First time it's red, then it's blue, then it's green. And it does that really quick. So if you take those three colors and put them together, you got white, like a flashlight. Then what happens is every one of those pixels is turned on and off with either a rotation of a polarization through the liquid crystal, or if it's a DLP, it's the motion of a mirror. But what you're doing in every case is throwing away the light of a fully lit, full bright display. All that light gets thrown away, goes in, and then the little bit of stuff that you want off the display gets projected out into the real world.
Okay, understand. And with your technology, you don't need that actually because it emits itself, the light, right? Is it kind of that? Could I imagine it like that?
So you walk up to tray number one or to box number one, you're going to pick two items out of that box, right? So you got the letter two up there, the number two up there. It's got 500 pixels on. It's drawn, instead of a million plus pixels all on full blast, it's only got 500 pixels on. So the power consumption goes right through the floor with this thing. It's because you're only running the pixels you want. So you got a really tiny form factor. You got a significant drop in power consumption. It fits in glasses that look just like regular glasses. And now the batteries in the temples, we make a product called the Blade today. I mean, you can see it up on our website. It's got a 2-inch box on the side of the temples and they're cool. I'd be the first guy to say they're the closest thing to real glasses out there today, but full power, couple of watts of power running all the time. That whole thing has been shrunk down to this pencil eraser. It's a 2-inch box that is now the size of a pencil eraser that's drawing milliwatts of power in a comparison to the. So you put all this stuff together and you're ending up with, number one, you put the glasses on, great big fields of view. It's the same, like, you know, Marco, you have your glasses on right now. When you put these guys on, you would feel just as open, seeing all of the world. Mm-hmm. Unlike companies like Enreal, where you got only the bottom two or one half of it that you can see through. This is just like regular glasses.
Yeah, and they're not closed off at the side so that you cannot see out there, right? It's just like normal glasses. Yeah,
yeah, you can see here they're fairly trim. I mean,
mm-hmm. I'm going to post a picture with it. Yeah. And Paul, one question, because you got those projectors, or how do you call them? The projecting devices?
Yeah, we do call them a mini projector. It's a micro micro LED projector.
Okay, because you got them in both eyes, you can actually calculate or display objects that appear in front of you. Is that true? I just saw kind of a sneak preview of your glasses, but I imagined it that way, that you can actually project things in I don't know, 1-2 foot feet in front of you. So is that possible, and how does it feel, and how can you describe that?
There's nothing like the experience until you put a pair on to see a virtual image that's not real, but there it is.
so now I got the challenge for you, Paul. You've got to describe it so that our podcast listeners can hear it. So how does it feel?
So let me see what I can do in that regard. You know, if you put a flat image out there, like a piece of paper, let's say, right? The way that works is the piece of paper, let's say, it's got a plus sign on it. Okay. Suppose the piece of paper, this is the real world. Let's not worry about the glasses just yet. I put that piece of paper 2 foot away from me, in front of me. And I got my left or my right eye looking at that piece of paper, and I'm looking at the cross, and it's angled in a little bit towards the bridge of my nose as it looks out 2 feet away at that plus sign. Now my left eye is doing the same thing. And so my two eyes converge at 2 feet away. So my mind can gauge that thing is 2 feet away from me. And I can tell because the strain on my eyes from a convergence perspective tell me it's that far away. Where hunters, just like, you know, T-Rex could look forward, and there was a reason why. He could get depth perception because of the convergence of his eyes. He would also use focus at the same time. So there's a bunch of different cues the human mind uses. All right, so here we go. Now I've got a display in each eye, okay? Mm-hmm. And I can put a piece of paper in the right eye and that same piece of paper in the left eye, but I can adjust where it sits on the display. So I got my left eye and my right eye seeing this piece of paper, and I can change where it crosses on the displays so that as I'm looking at it in front of me, it starts at 10 inches away, and I look at it and it feels like it's 10 inches away. And then I start to slide them apart on the displays. And as I do that, the convergence of my eyes starts to go out. And it's uncanny when that happens. You can see this piece of paper floating in front of you move away from you in space. Mm-hmm. And when it matches that 2 foot real world piece of paper, they feel like they're in the same darn place. Now I'm doing that with a piece of paper example. That could be a Pokemon Go character in 3D. Right? So I got the glasses on and I'm out chasing Pokemon Go characters, and they look like they're standing there, really there in 3D space. And it's really uncanny when you have the real world sitting next to it. So if I had a Pokemon Go character sitting next to my phone here, it would look like it was sitting right next to my phone, like it belonged there, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So the stereoscopic effects can be quite impressive. I will say that when the convergence starts to get too close, there's challenges because the focus of the eyes.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, there's all kinds of technical issues here. But the reality of it is these glasses portray it just like I described. So when you put these glasses on, you see a 3D user interface out in front of you, not a flat phone like I have here. And it's just a simple touchscreen. There's dials and buttons and things that look like they're really there. Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine something where we could use that in logistics, like with the picking use case that you mentioned before, that you can see the box around the box that where you have to take the items out a little bit further away, and then you move closer and it moves closer also, and some make it really optical smoother for the picker.
Yeah, absolutely. The way it is today on our M4000, which is a monocular version of what I just described to you, so it's only in one eye, you look mm-hmm. through and it's out there, but you know, if you're looking and there's five boxes in front of you and they're all kind of horizontally, you can't tell if the number two is at the closest box or the next box mm-hmm. in or the next box in. But with the glasses that are in 3D, yeah, you see the number two move across the top of the boxes mm-hmm. exactly as you just described. Yeah.
You could even display 2 feet in front of you the product that you're just about to pick in the next step, right? And make it turn in 3D or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And those new glasses, they also come with audio, so you can actually hear and you can use it as a phone. And that's why you think that it will actually, it's possible that it replaces the phone one day, right?
Marco, this pair here, you can see there's a little bit more depth on the bottom of this right here, but mm-hmm. it's still wide open in the front. I mean, they look great. These guys will have an LTE option. So this is a phone. You're looking at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's not just glasses. I kind of mentioned it earlier on, I think, when we were talking about it, but it's going to replace the phone, I believe. And with those glasses on, you'll be able to say, call Francine. It'll pick up. It'll dial. You'll be able to walk down the street because they're LTE radios. You could say, Alexa, can you play my country and Western pick list, please? Boom, it comes up and you're enjoying yourself. Maybe it's rock if that's what you like, whatever. You can say, Alexa, can I see the front door cam, please, at my house? I think I just got a package delivered. And, you know, it'll show you that video feed coming off of your house. You can be at the football game or the baseball game, let's say, and you're watching your son for the first time get his first hit, and you can say, record video. Boom, and glasses are on, and it's recording the video of that, and you don't have your face stuck in your phone. This is going to be the beginnings of not taking your phone out of your pocket. Thinking about mapping for just a minute, you ask the phone through the glasses, can I get directions, mm-hmm. please, to the Italian restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. Got the glasses on, you're walking down the street, and in the glasses, as you're looking down the street, it knows because of the camera which direction you're looking at. It says 550 feet, hang a right on the next street corner. Not taking the phone out of your pocket ever again. So this is the beginnings of this shift where you can do so many things with the glasses on and be part of the real world for a change. I've seen people with their face in their phones walk out in the street in New York City and almost get run over by a car. You know, with these kinds of tools, the glasses will be smart enough with AI engines and running. They can even keep you safe from those kinds of things because they can see car mode.
They warn you. Yeah.
Yep.
And plus, you're looking good wearing the glasses. Yeah.
And this, Marco, is the number one thing. I'm a big believer in spatial computing. I think someday dinosaurs are going to walk around in front of us and they're not really there. You know, the magic leap with the whales jumping out of the floors. I thought that was the coolest demo, right?
Mm-hmm. The whale jumping out of the floor.
Just amazing, right? Mm-hmm. But to do that today, even come close to doing that today, requires equipment that's so big and bulky, nobody will wear it. Step one, right? I mean, the smartphone did not start with a touchscreen. Nokia had wonderful smartphones without touchscreens on them. Now they got run over in the end because they didn't keep innovating. But you first got to get to a useful product that gives you useful solutions that you'll use. And this is where Vuzix, it's how we've been able to survive so far, is we make products that go to work. They solve problems. People will wear them. And these next generation glasses, I think, are the first ones that are fashion forward enough that people would use them in a lot more places because you don't look like, again, you just, you know, stepped out of a science fiction movie or something.
Mm-hmm. And I got one question on the LinkedIn post for that podcast that I did in advance. And Kai was asking that you are striving to really have good looking glasses, normal looking glasses. Yeah. So that you, what we were talking about, that you're not looking like the space guy coming out of space or somewhere. But did you also think about maybe adding some feature that distinguishes the AR glasses from normal glasses to actually make it more attractive to want them or to have them. Was that also something that you thought about, or why did you not do it, or did you do it maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, actually. And I wish that there were more levers that could be pushed today on the design front. You will be able to tell if you purchase the pair that have these cameras on them, because there's these, you know, these orifices in the front of them that you can tell they're not quite normal glasses, right? Mm-hmm. You tell that they are AR driven kinds of glasses. We do our best.
So if you know it, if you know where to look, then you know how to distinguish them, yeah? Right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I have to say the mass market, the broader markets, they don't really want to look different today. I would say that with the right marketing and the right companies and the right branding behind it, anything can look cool. I mean, when the earbuds from Apple came out without cords on them, nobody cared, nobody looked. But when you just have these two little white things sticking out of your ears, for the longest time, people looked odd. Apple did a brilliant job. You know, they got famous people wearing them. They turned it into like everybody's got to have those really cool look. And I think that you can do that with AR glasses if you have enough money and the marketing prowess to be able to build all of that. And, you know, for Vuzix, there's going to be a little bit of that going on here, I'm very sure. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are famous that have seen some of what we're doing, and they'd love to have a pair of these things. Mm-hmm. And they are going to look a little bit different. I mean, not much. I recommend people take a look at the videos. If maybe you could give them the links and stuff, Marco.
Sure, I do, yeah.
I mean, these things are pretty mainstream looking, but they're different enough, I think.
All right.
You know, in the future, I mean, there's so many different kinds of glasses out there today. You go to the sunglass hut to try to find a pair of glasses you want to buy, and there's like 1,000 different pairs to choose from, right?
Yeah. All right. Paul, maybe the last question. For some people, this might feel like the future is coming now. So when does it come, actually? I think it's not far away, right? When do you start selling them?
Well, the enterprise version of our products are available today. And in fact, our business is just going wild right now with the amount of companies that are helping to solve problems. So those things are available today. The next gens, which I know we had a lot of interest on that front, and we did win all these awards at CES.
Sure.
It should be by the fall of this year, late in the year.
Okay, so this year. And can you mention also a price already? Probably not, but maybe a range or something? What do you have in mind?
We're going to have an enterprise pair first. It'll be the more all-in pair with the cameras and, you know, everything, soup to nuts. Those will probably be $1,500 kind of a thing. But, you know, they're designed a bit more rugged. They're designed to be in a space where that kind of a price point's not scary at all, because one use of them pays for them kinds of a thing, right? The consumer, the more broad-based solutions, they'll be less than that, reasonably less than that. I will say, though, based upon everything you want in them, you know, a smartphone today can cost $1,200 based on the phone and the features and the, you know, so, but I think you're going to see, you know, high end smartwatch on up to early end phones in the sort of mass market, more broader side of the market. I don't think you'll see that this fall though from Vuzix. That's going to be in the new year sometime. And we're doing that with partners, not directly through Vuzix.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And also the marketing and so then with partners from the consumer side or?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Well, we in logistics here, Paul, we are looking forward for the new glasses. And thank you so much for telling us about all the new stuff that you have in AR. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah. You're welcome, Marco. I had fun too.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was the Logistics Tribe podcast episode with Paul Travers from Vuzix. If you like today's show, please consider giving us 5 stars on iTunes. That really helps with the search algorithm and it helps other people find this podcast. As you know, we're just getting started here, so every new listener means a lot to us. Please feel free to connect with us, with any of the three founders of the Logistics Tribe, Dana, Marco, or myself. The links to our LinkedIn profiles are in the show notes. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.